It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Actually, I was just thinking about this because, especially for the distance you travel, you are remarkably consistent in your arrival time. But I don't feel that emotionally. And I believe there's a direct relationship to how soon I get set up and how late I think you are. Because just this time, I was sitting here for a couple minutes, and I'm like, wow, he's still not here. And I looked, and I'm like, yeah, no, traditionally, he's not here yet. He's not late at all. He would be early if he came through the door now. It's just that I've been sitting here for a while, because I don't really know how to plan things in lower than 5-minute increments. So I always assume it takes 10 minutes to set up, which is not accurate, but it's variable enough that's okay. But then, like, I was like, I need to go to the bathroom first, so I'll add on another 5 minutes. It did not take me 5 minutes to go to the bathroom. But I couldn't be like, add on 2 minutes. That doesn't...
I really like your shirt.
Check in my head. This is a new shirt, and it is quite popular. Trish bought me 3 shirts recently. I have only worn 2 of them. Both are quite popular. This one is nice because it is purple, and so I now have a new shirt for Purple Thursday, whereas before I just had 1 shirt that was purple, and so I wore that every Thursday.
It's got little purple flowers.
It's got little flowers on it.
Some green. There's little green leaves off the flower, but they're small, so it's like from a distance you might just see
dots or something.
Yeah,
like that.
A vaguely purple shirt.
But they're
when you
little.
Get close, they're little flowers, and they're quite lovely.
Yes, and I've gotten a lot of credit for this one.
And it's a nice put-together shirt. Buttons are
nice.
Yeah,
it's very good cut.
Yep.
The other one she gave me is a wave thing. Like it looks vaguely like a Hawaiian shirt, but it's with a very sort of Asian-inspired wave pattern across it.
Oh,
and it's
nice.
Good, but it doesn't have a breast pocket, and that's a problem for me. But I've been working to wear it anyway, because I like it. And then the third one... I haven't put it on yet. I'm a little nervous about it, but we'll see. It has a pattern that, to me, feels very retro in a way that I'm not sure about, but I'll try it in other people. I like this shirt. I like it more as more other people tell me they like it.
The thing about... Okay, so... If I were to see that pattern in, like, a bolt of cloth, I would not immediately think, hey, that would make a nice shirt.
No.
But I see you wearing it, and I think... That's nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
I have grown in my clothing color and pattern choices over the years, which is a little funny because, as I have said many times before, I have not purchased my own clothes for the vast majority of my life. There's a very small window where I purchased my own clothes. But I still make demands on the people who choose my clothes for me. And I used to be all about very dark. Mostly gray was good. Black was great. You could do really dark earth tones or things like that. A deep wine color, things like that. That was it. Patterns were mostly out. You could do the occasional plaid or check. But it had to be a fairly calm one.
Yeah.
And then over the years, I have discovered... Well, the first big one was that I had to come to terms with the fact that I look really good in blue. Because of my eyes. It came up enough often that I was like, people tell me this is a thing. So now I have a lot of blue. But then I learned that I like lots of colors. And as I got older and also cared less about what other people thought, I branched out. And nowadays, there's very few things that I would look at and just be like, yeah, no, I would not wear that. Even this one I joke about that I haven't tried yet. I'm not actually scared of it. It just didn't jump out at me, so I haven't had the urge to bother to wear it. Like, I don't really have anything against it, and I really should wear it because I keep forgetting.
I would never have thought of you as someone who had a narrow
Yes, I
sartorial. Is that the word? Sartor.
Yes.
Sartorial. Sense. Because if someone were to ask me, I mean, I've mostly been around you at work, mm-hmm. so I don't feel like I've gotten a good sample of what you would just choose to wear outside of a dress code situation.
Yeah.
But so if someone asked me to guess what you would be like, I would think, well, I'm sure that sometimes he's in a flamboyant mood or he's in this mood or that mood. I wouldn't have thought there was any limits whatsoever on what you would
the
wear.
The real answer is what you see me wear at work is mostly what I wear.
Oh.
I wear jeans and I wear some sort of short sleeve button-up shirt.
Like what you're wearing
untucked.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the difference is when I can get away with it, I will wear shorts or no pants. And then I can get costumey sometimes, but not very often. Yeah, so that's pretty much my look. I'm much more open nowadays, but I don't worry about it much. These shirts, Trish said, I'm ordering you new shirts. And she orders things like, you know, when I get low, like, oh, these are getting kind of ratty. We have to throw them out. I could use some more. Or I'm too fat. I don't fit in these. I could use some more. Things like that. And she's like, I'm ordering you new shirts. And I'm like, actually, I'm pretty good on shirts right now. That's not the thing I need. And this was over chat. And she's like, I know. I'm just getting kind of tired of your shirts.
Oh.
And it wasn't they were, like, ratty or anything. She's just like, I'm bored with them. So I'm going to get you some new ones.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's nice, though. Yes. I mean.
Actually, this box may have. Yeah, here's the third one.
Mmm. Oh, I see.
I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine, but something about it says vaguely Miami Vice to me. I don't know why.
I think it'll look good on you.
I think it'll be fine.
I'm not sure it would work for me.
It just didn't jump out at me. I can't imagine you not in a Batman t-shirt, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, it would be a tent on you, but
she's
that's
got pretty good taste, really.
Yeah, she does. As did my mother in the years she was purchasing my clothes. I don't know that has... I can't state that her tastes expand to all things, or that her tastes have continued to be good in the intervening years. But during the time when she purchased clothes for me, she generally had a good eye for it.
So is that the kind of blue that works for you, or does it have to be a
different shade? No. Usually it's more of a jewel tone kind of thing.
Okay.
Like, that's a deep navy.
Yeah, like a navy.
That's almost a black, yeah. No. No, it's some it has to bring out to my eyes.
Well, what does that mean, though?
I don't know either. I don't. What the hell does that mean?
I don't know.
Presumably, if it's a color similar enough to my eye shade, this makes note of the complementing color in my eyes, is how I think it works. This is one of those places where, although we don't in many other reasons, you and I both happen to fall squarely into traditional guy tropes here. No idea.
What color are your eyes exactly?
Blue.
But they're like a different blue than mine. Mine are grayish blue.
Mine are pretty bright blue. I like to compare them to Cary Elwes's eyes, partially because I think that is a pretty accurate shade, and partially because his got to be described by Robin Wright as eyes like the sea after a storm.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's worth it to me to say mine are similar, but I do feel like it's a similar shade to his.
Huh.
So.
I never really noticed.
Yeah.
The thing is, when a person asks me what my favorite part of a person is, it's usually their eyes.
Left ear.
No, their eyes. It's pretty much their whole face, right? Their eyes and mouth and all that. But then when they ask me, well, what color are their eyes? I don't.
This is the thing.
That's not the thing that fascinates me about eyes. Is the color? It's the other things.
I used to think it was eyes that I was way into, but like. Sort of everybody says that when they want to seem not superficial.
Well.
And I realized that, like, as time went on, I'd be like, okay, so you like that person's eyes. Close your eyes. Picture their eyes. No idea.
Yeah, I can almost never what their color is.
I won't go. But not even color. Like, I just can't imagine. Like, I can't focus in on somebody's eyes.
Oh, you can't?
No. So I've kind of given up on saying that. I do still like eyes. I wrote a quite long poem about my wife's eyes once. Which I was really inspired because my wife has brown eyes, which you're like, oh, brown, traditional, yeah, like the most common, kind of boring.
My wife has brown.
She has the most stunning shade of just deep dark, like I like to say chocolate cake brown. And so I wrote a whole poem about her eyes. But in general, yeah, I don't think I'm as into eyes as I think I am.
I think what I picture, if someone asks me to picture a person's eyes who I'm talking about that I like, it's usually the shape. It's not so much the color.
Yeah, and I can't even picture that well. I think mouths are big for me. Smiles specifically.
Yeah, exactly, right.
But
right.
But mouth shapes in general. And eyes often just in relation to position. Are they looking up? Are they looking dead on? Are they looking to the side? Are they downcast? Because when I write stuff, that and the expression on the mouth seem to be the things I go to.
Well, I also think that another thing that I mean when I say eyes is...
it's ocular cavity in general.
No, it's probably a lot like when you say mouth and you're thinking specifically of a smile. Well, eyes smile.
And that's the thing. So. I think when we're talking about what facial features we notice, it's frequently what ones that we use to interpret expression. I think for me, mouth is a lot bigger of a thing than eyes.
Or the expression that we're always trying to affect in that person.
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I can tell a lot by eyes. The concept dead behind the eyes, people used to make like jokes about that. And one time I was like, I know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can fake a smile, but it doesn't reach your eyes, and it's an almost indefinable thing, but it's absolutely there. You can't fake the smile in your eyes.
Yeah.
But in general, I think I am more focused on the mouth, because I think very much in terms of very slight alterations of mouth and like different things that those mean.
Sure, tension or...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of different grins and what they mean in terms of sarcastic or not and things like that. And... Don't get freaked out, but I've learned long ago I apparently have a major oral fixation, so it's probably tied to, like, I'm always obsessed with lips and, like, touching my own lips and, like, putting, like, I chew on pens and stuff.
Why would that freak me out?
I'm all about it. Because...
That's not unusual.
Yes, but it borders on almost being, like, a sexual thing.
It doesn't matter if it is or isn't. There's a lot of people with oral fixations. It's not uncommon.
I know that.
And they're very frequently crossed over to sexuality also.
Exactly.
But
and you don't like to know specifics in that area.
Yeah, but it's so general that it's not.
All right.
I mean, if you hadn't mentioned me being uncomfortable about it, I wouldn't even have thought about it. But now I am. Thanks for that.
How about my enjoyment of spankings?
No, I don't need
to. It's not a sex thing.
Yeah. Okay, good.
It's not, no.
Thanks for clearing that up.
It's a
pore
issue. The pores on my butt are really big. And if you...
Okay.
It's a thing.
Sure.
My stylist can explain it to you.
Your stylist? Okay.
What
are we doing?
So I had a dream.
Do I want to know this?
I think this one's fine.
Is this just getting worse?
I think this one's fine. I think you'll find this funny and not weird. It was
8.6 miles.
I'm always fascinated.
That's how far it is to this house.
All right.
I drive 8.6 miles. And you start telling me this stuff.
Yep. $60 I paid. I had a dream, and this was like, I love the things how you can have a dream that goes on for like a long time, and then like only a couple minutes have passed in the real world.
Yeah, right.
Because this is the thing, like it was 15 minutes before my alarm was going off. Mm. So I'm like, okay, I'll just start to lay here and relax. And I kind of dozed off. And I had a dream in which I answered a phone. And there was somebody on the other end, and it was a man with a very high, reedy, sort of, how's it going? Sort of very weak-sounding, timid voice. I don't remember anything about what we discussed.
Okay.
But at a certain point in it, they said, "So this is Tom Cruise."
Okay.
Not even the funny part yet, though. Or the weird part.
That is kind of funny, though.
He said that he... In the dream, that's what the voice said. My brain processed that as Tom Selleck.
Oh.
And the idea that in the years since I had last seen him on TV, I guess, Tom Selleck's voice had become all high and thin and reedy like that freaked me out enough that I legitimately had an adrenaline release in my body and it woke me up with adrenaline flooding through me. And it had been like 3 minutes, like there was still like 12 minutes till the alarm was going off. Mm. And then only at that point am I like, wait, also he said Tom Cruise. Why was I so sure That was Tom Selleck. Like, I don't know what the fuck
that's weird.
Going on with that.
That's very but weird.
I like Tom Selleck. I mean, I will admit that, but... hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world called the most memeable podcast by people who have no idea what memes are. Mostly just random old people that I get to say that.
Sure.
In exchange for hard candy.
Hard candy?
Yeah. That's how you can...
Like Werther's?
Exactly. Exactly. Star Brights. After Eights, if I'm feeling generous. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 433.
And it's another goddamn double.
Yep, we gotta do double.
Because next week is our Independence Day. Ooh, I'm a Yankee Teeter Dandy.
You know, I really don't like it much when you impersonate Tom Selleck.
I'm Tom Cruise. Can't you tell?
Oh, my mistake.
See? It's easy to mix them up, I know, but...
My mistake. My mistake. Go on, as you were.
So, anyway. I guess this means I don't have to explain next time, but I do have to explain this time. All right. For those of you just joining us, we've been gone for like 3 weeks, so this will get weird. We have a hat.
3 weeks.
It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Excuse me. Folks, like yourselves, cool people, nice people, people in the know, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little topics, questions, comments, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its elastic servants, draw the note cards out of the air, out of the hat, at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. You can tell when I slow down on the description that I'm trying to come up with an E word.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Yes.
Now I know.
Knowing is half the battle. I had to recite one of the, except it wasn't a real one. It was one they did on Robot Chicken one time. It was a fake knowing is half the battle thing at the end of G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah, right.
And some kid was feeding his dog candy, and one of the G.I. Joes, who I don't remember which one he was, comes in and was like, "Hey, kid, don't feed your chocolate to your dog. It's poison to dogs, and it can kill him." And then the kid's like, "But look, he likes it." And he's feeding him more. And so the guy kneels down by the dog, takes the chocolate, takes a little nibble. And he's like, "This isn't chocolate. It's carob." And the boy's like, "Is Fluffy going to be okay?" He's like, "Your dog's going to be fine, kid. But your mom's a damn hippie." G.I. Joe.
Carob's not that bad. But
no, but I like the combination. That's why I like Sixlets.
Oh.
They have both carob and chocolate in it. It's very weird. But it gives them a very unique flavor that they like. Also, you damn hippie. All right, so it's been 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Yeah. I'm assuming a lot of things had happened.
Well, there was Father's Day. Went down home for Father's Day. That was nice. There was my wife's birthday. That was nice.
Wait, there was Father's Day. So I haven't talked to you since Minneapolis.
Yeah, that's right.
Holy crap.
And, we saw Godzilla, King of Monsters.
Godzilla, King of Monsters. So you and like four other people. It did not do well.
Well, see, the problem with that film is the problem with all the films, and that's it. That's the all this set
all
of films.
All the films.
This set of films. It's like when they made the Godzilla movie and the Kong Skull Island movie too. It's like they. It's like someone said, "All right, one of you, we're going to break you guys into two teams. One of you guys are going to work on the monster stuff, and the other team is going to work on the human stuff."
All right.
And the monster stuff is pretty great, but the human stuff is terrible. Just terrible. I don't know why.
It's like in real life.
I don't know why they get it so wrong, because the rest of it seems okay. Oh, I also saw, though, Shin Godzilla, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it was good. It's quite good. It was a very, to me, the 1954 original Godzilla is a cinematic masterpiece. And it makes me like Godzilla things in general. Even if it's not very good, I still kind of like it. But my wife is sort of a... my wife's kind of a fan of kaiju in general, I think. I'm not. I'm just really pretty much Godzilla and, say, King Kong, who's not a kaiju. But you know what I mean.
Not even Mothra? You bastard.
No, I was never much into the rest. All except that Godzilla was in there. So anyhow, I did know all of the monsters that were in the movie.
Yeah.
Because I had watched some of those old
movies.
There
are only like four of them, so...
No, there's a lot of them.
Oh, I thought it was just Ghidorah and Mothra and Godzilla and Rodan.
Well, I mean, those are the ones you're going to recognize, but there's more than that.
Oh, and you recognize the other ones.
Maybe like one of the other ones. Some of the other ones I think they made up just for the
Megazord.
Movie. Well, no, it's not. No, not stuff like that. But anyway...
Roadrunner.
So she liked the movie, I think, just in general. And I do have
Bobby Brown,
I do
famous
have to,
kaiju.
I do have to say that the human part was probably better than the previous movies, but still not very good.
Yeah, well, and that's a low bar for that last one, especially
right,
for the Godzilla one. It was not.
And not really worth. I mean, we're Millie Bobby Brown fans, but also Vera Farmiga fans. And they were fine in it, but it's like they just didn't give them very much to do. The story was really thin and weak.
I love Vera Farmiga, but her presence in a movie could go either way. Like, her picking of a project means there's no telling.
Well, but we were glad
some
we
actors
saw it.
If they're in something you're like, this means it'll be good.
Yeah, we that's were glad we saw it in the theater, but that's about all there is to that. A lot of other things happened too, but I mean, the reason we've been apart for 3 weeks is because you were doing things specifically, so you probably have a lot
and
more to talk
about.
And because of A&W. Oh yeah, A&W, that's right. A&W's birthday. And I had some root beer, and that was pretty nice.
Sent me a lot of things. Texted me a lot of stuff.
Well, I thought, you know, you would share my joy.
So much.
No, but you were like, you left town and everything. You went places.
I did.
So talk about it.
Everything's up to date in Kansas City.
Up to date?
Yeah, they've gone about as far as they can go.
What's that supposed to be?
It's from Oklahoma. How do you not know this stuff?
Oh, I don't know anything.
Fair thing. Everything's up to date, Kansas City. They gone about as far as they can go.
I don't know anything about that.
No, we went to Minneapolis to see Michelle Wolf at a comedy club. And then the next night to see Hannah Gadsby at the Pantages Theater.
Like I told you, she was being interviewed on NPR right before I came in.
We're not sure we are for Minneapolis. It's a great city, but we don't get how it works exactly. It's very crowded and confusing, and somehow in a way that Chicago isn't for us. It may partially be because freaking everyone drives in Minneapolis. I don't know what that's about. It's a huge city, and it has decent public transit, but everybody drives. And so it's just kind of crazy. But we had a good weekend. had some good food at a few places, including some really good Italian food that we happened to by accident. Saw Michelle Wolf. I can't remember the name of her opener, which is bad because I want to look into him more because he was really funny. But she was good. It was interesting. I laughed a lot. And I was very in the zone. I'd also had a couple of cocktails, I think, at that one because it's a comedy club, so drinking a little bit. And I laughed, and her presentation's wonderful. And as I suspected, when it's just her again and not a team of writers, way funnier. There is stuff she did that I didn't really agree with in places. But still laughed. because like I'm just sort of caught up in the moment and stuff like that. But there's some of it that I'm like, that's not that great. I'm a good audience member, and I do. And that was minimal. Most of the stuff was pretty hilarious. She's really leaning into this. Well, as she said during this, like, she was talking about the White Horse Card Swan's Dinner or something. She's like, so some people don't like me now, but I don't care about being liked. I want to be funny. She's really leaning into that in some places. But it's good. I highly recommend seeing her in person. And she was very funny and had a great time. Next night, Hannah Gadsby. We're excited. I get there, sit down. Also trepidatious, though, because I'm suddenly like, this is the same comedian for whom my entire experience was one comedy special that made me cry and later gave me nightmares. What am I hoping for?
Yeah, right.
And I was like, I expect this will be a meaningful experience for me. I don't know if I'll enjoy it. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
And she's very aware of this too.
Right.
Because she came out and very early on, she's like, so I assume most of you are here because you saw my special on Netflix, Nanette. And like most of us all cheer. And she's like, that's what I thought. Why? And she's like, do you like trauma? Is that... Because I'm afraid there's not going to be a lot of that tonight, if that's what you were hoping for. And then she's just fucking brilliant. And there was a little trauma. There's not much trauma, though. It was funny. She's very erudite. Again, leaned heavily on her art history stuff, but, like, really funny about it. Opened up about a lot of new things. I mean, I guess, spoiler alert for her comedy special, she comes out as autistic.
Yeah, she talked about that in the interview.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of people, like, don't believe her because she's pretty good at social interaction. And apparently she says it's because she spent most of her life undiagnosed, and so she learned how to do it thinking that everybody else was normal and she wasn't. So she's good at socializing, but it exhausts her. And... she much prefers other types of engagement and things like that. That was very interesting to me and gave me sort of a new perspective on that. Still, she has insights into gender relations and stuff that still, like, some of it I'm like, yes, about time somebody fucking said it. That's awesome. But other ones that I'm like, you know, I never thought about that. I act like that sometimes. She helped me evaluate things about myself.
Oh, that's always good.
And she's just, like, she is funny, but she's also just really smart. Like, the whole thing was like, I think I want to read essays that she writes. Like, more even than I want to go to her stand-up. But I loved her stand-up. It was really good stuff. She's huge now. She has literally moved to L.A. And is, like, starting a career there and things, which... I mean, she chose to do it and likes it in a certain way, but apparently it's very awkward for, again, the sort of autism thing, moving to an entire new continent. She's like, since my fame, one big thing that has changed, a lot more people touch me, and I don't really like that, and it's compounded by the fact that in most cases I'm paying them to do it, because she has, like, stylists and things like that. But yeah, that was really fun. And then went and hung out with my brother's family, and that was cool. Got to see everybody. Not a lot that would be of other people's interest, I think, there, but we had a good time with them. And then this last weekend, Trish and her sister, I had the option to. I decided not to, because this weekend we're going to the Quad Cities to see the Dinner Theater Holiday Inn, and then we were in Minneapolis, and in between I was like, I want to stay home. But in between, Trish and her sister went to Chicago and saw a relatively new musical, except it's not a musical, is apparently a song cycle, is technically what it is, called Six. That is a six-person, all-female cast of Henry VIII's wives. and apparently it's really good. She has sort of sketched out the base for me, but apparently it's pretty awesome. And so, yeah, they really like that a lot. I'm still playing a lot of Final Fantasy XII, really enjoying it. I am so close to done with Odd Wings. I have, I believe, 45 pages out of 315 left to edit.
Wow.
Basically, all I have is the rescue mission that is the climax of it, and then the epilogue, and that's it. Everything else is done.
Wow.
And I'm so excited to be done. I am confident I will be done by the end of July. I think it's possible I will be done by next week.
Wow.
I have plotted a particular evening where I'm like, I don't have plans. I think I may just go somewhere isolated, sit down, and force myself to finish it.
Nice.
I'm so happy about that. Finished N.K. Jemisin's short story collection. Really good stuff. Lent it to Coffee because I think she'd really like it. About halfway through that Ursula Le Guin essays, and I'm really enjoying that. I think I'm going to gift that to some people that I think would like it after I finish with it. finished season 2, part 2, whatever. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys...
Oh, yeah.
Man, that show is such hot garbage, and I am so in at this point. That show is so dumb.
For me, it's hard.
And I'm loving it.
For me, it's just hard to track. But it, I don't...
Because it makes no sense. Everyone in that show is really dumb and makes dumb decisions, and things go to hell, sometimes literally, because of it. Also, that show is incredibly familiar with the word feminism.
With the word.
Exactly. Holy crap.
Well, that's what I mean. It doesn't really track, but not in a way where I just get bored and don't want to watch.
No, it's amazing.
It's like you keep watching because even though it doesn't make very much sense, well, I don't. To me, it doesn't make very much sense. I still keep
it's
watching because
supernatural scripted genre fiction with what I feel like is the appeal of reality TV. I'm just like, what crazy shit are they going to do next?
Yeah, that is kind of what it is. You just don't know what's going to happen, and so you just want
to
know.
Here's how I want to put it to you guys.
And somehow it doesn't matter if it's ridiculous. You're still...
No, it totally matters, because if it was, I would stop.
Well, okay.
I'm hate-watching the shit out of this.
I see what you're
saying. This is first season Once Upon a Time and that stupid Dracula show, like, rolled up together.
Yeah, it is kind
of
like that.
With just a hint of Arrowverse. last episode, which was a major arc ending, put in a song from Phantom of the Opera out of fucking nowhere. And I don't mean as a background soundtrack. I mean happening in the show.
Yeah.
Like the characters were aware of the song happening
right.
for no reason, with no explanation, and never to reference again.
That's right. That was very weird.
I was watching it. I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
What? Did I have a stroke? What is that? And it was amazing. Like, so much of it makes no fucking sense. And we set up what I imagine are going to be the three major story arcs of the next season, because it's renewed. They renewed for like three seasons at once or something. It's going to go for a while.
I guess it's
And
done
I have
well.
Given up on being mad about it. Like, I am loving the shit out of it. It is an absolute train wreck, but I am loving it. It's ridiculous.
So why do you think people are liking it so much?
Maybe the same reason I am. I don't know. It's
just because
it's
crazy.
Busy. Like, it is not slow. That's huge thing.
That's true.
Like,
it's always moving.
You are 2/3 of the way to a successful TV show if you can just do not boring.
Yeah, that's true.
And not boring is not just a speed issue. It is also a stakes issue.
Yeah.
Because things need to be happening, but you also have to give a damn about the things happening.
Yeah.
Although I do feel like it's going to be hard to improve the stakes. We kind of hit the high note already.
You'd think, anyway.
It's going to be... But... And just... all the completely inconsistent characters, and it's a fun game of, like, who is my most and least favorite character throughout. And slowly, like one or two episodes from the end, I turned to Trish, and I'm like, it happened without me noticing, but Theo might be my favorite now. And she agreed. And then, near the tail end of the final episode, Theo got some of the dumbest lines ever, and I felt so bad for him. Theo literally says, "It's like we're in a club," in response to the most unlike we're in a club sentences ever said right before. Like, oh. And when they're trying to name the club at the end. How much Buffy did you watch?
Too much.
Were you also waiting in the pause for Harvey to say Scooby Gang? Because that's what this entire thing feels like. We are absolutely turning into a Buffy. Like, that's what we're shooting for here.
Yeah.
Next season is going to be Buffy as fuck.
But that's not a good thing, in my opinion.
No, none of it's good. It's terrible. It's hilarious. And there's these characters, and you're like, why do I like them? And then they have one episode, you're like, oh, that's why I like them. And then they're totally not again. Like, I have such a love-hate thing with Ambrose. Ambrose might be my favorite character. But then he has the episodes that are, like, dumb as hell. But then they have ones that, like, really work, where they're all like, well, we need somebody with experience in smelting. And literally everyone in the room slowly turns their head. And we're like, of course. Like, it's so... And it has so many great actors who should not be on a show like this. Surrounded by so many terrible actors who belong exactly where they are. It's confusing.
It is confusing.
But it's just hilarious. Cracks me up no end.
I think it
super excited.
It might scratch an itch in a way because, like, we liked Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Which was actually a pretty good show.
Compelling horror fiction is few and far between, even more than compelling sci-fi. But that's because sci-fi's been doing a little bit better lately.
But so we watch a lot of shows that we know can't even touch Penny Dreadful, but it we know that it scratches that. It's kind of like when you eat a Hershey bar. Because that's all that the store sells. And
because
you,
we
you
know American chocolate.
Chocolate
sucks, Craig. You don't have to tell us.
But as you pointed out, it's better than no chocolate.
Exactly.
So you buy it and you eat it. And
also, there is chocolate worse than Hershey's in this country. So
that's true, too. But the point being, you want something like that. There isn't anything else.
Yeah.
And it does sort of... It is sort of satisfying in that way.
We used to have this a lot with sci-fi. We're like, oh, this is mediocre sci-fi, and there's nothing better than mediocre sci-fi right now, so we'll watch it.
Right, right.
And, yeah, horror is very much that. I keep thinking I'm going to go back and do Penny and Dreadful, especially now it's done. Have you watched the start of Legion yet?
Watched what?
Legion. Legion's back.
Oh, I mean, we didn't even see the second season.
Oh, did you not? Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
We wanted to. I don't know. We have to wait till it's on streaming on Netflix or something.
Yeah, I think
that's
it's on
even
Hulu
gonna happen.
Now. And I think I can keep up with the third season as long as I keep up within like 4 weeks or whatever. I don't know. The second season, I mean, was brilliant like the first, but it was rough enough that like after the final episode of the season, AV Club did a review whose headline was, "Where does Legion go from here? And do we even want it to?" And third season is the last one, so. We'll see how that goes. I finished up Lucifer, but I feel like I did that before.
I don't remember.
It's fourth season. It gets one more. I was very... Compared to the first three seasons, four was really good. Still don't recommend you watch. It's not worth having to go through the first three. But there it is. I think we only saw one movie. I mean, I saw some dumb movies, but... Actually, one of the dumb movies I might talk to you about. Maybe I'll wait till the next episode. We saw one movie last night. We saw Hotel Artemis.
Oh, yeah?
Have you seen it?
No.
You familiar?
Yeah. I mean, I think we thought we might see it when it was, you know, available on streaming or something. But we heard it wasn't very good.
No, it was not well received.
Yeah.
And part of it is widely believed to be... basically a John Wick knockoff.
Yeah, that's what people were saying. Not a very good John Wick knockoff either.
Well, it's, yeah. If you're going to call it a John Wick knockoff, it is not very good. Because John Wick, about a really scary hitman who tried to get out but is dragged back in and kills everybody over a puppy and shit like that. But while that is an interesting part of John Wick, the thing that really compelled people in John Wick is it built this fake universe where there are all the, there's the secret society of assassins,
right?
And like there are secret hotels where the assassins can stay and they can't fight each other there. It's neutral ground and things like that. And they have this, their own currency and things like that. So Hotel Artemis is just set in the near future. That's like the beginnings of post-apocalyptic. Like shit's just bad, mm-hmm. more than now. And it's a world where there are essentially hospitals that are secure locations that cater just to criminals. And if you pay for membership, you can go there and get fixed. And like, you can't, no killing other patients or anything like that, and you're secure there as long as you're being fixed up. And this is about a particular one that is in an old hotel in Los Angeles. Mm. It is set about, I think it's set 2028.
Mm.
And this particular one is, there, a riot has just started because that day, some big company has shut off the public water supply in LA and has sparked a huge riot. And so a lot of people end up at this, a lot of these criminals end up at this hotel to for the hospital to get fixed. And this is basically the story of what happens that night. Mm. Trish definitely seemed to like it less than I did. I thought it was quite good.
Oh, okay.
Not great. Good. It is, among other things, it is a very good B-level movie. Full of A-list actors. This movie has Jodie Foster,
mm-hmm.
Dave Bautista, Sterling K. Brown, Brian Tyree Henry, or Henry Tyree Brian Tyree Henry, the guy from Atlanta. Charlie Day is in this. Zachary Quinto is in this. A very famous person who is a surprise when they show up, so I won't even spoil who that person is. But a person that I would argue is a bigger celebrity than anyone I've just mentioned. And then a couple other people who I'm pretty sure are well known. But oh, and Jenny Slate is in it, who I also like. All of these in this movie, and they all do their darndest. It gets sloppy in places. It's a very complex story, and it's one of those where like everybody has a different story and then it turns out they're all sort of connected,
mm-hmm.
but not in a really nice way. Like Trish is like, I want it to be like a heist movie, but it didn't manage that. It mm-hmm. is sloppier than that, but it's still fun, and I think it's an interesting story. I liked it. It's not like great. I'm not like, oh, you have to see this movie, but I thought it was pretty good. It was fun to see Dave Bautista as like a human.
Yeah.
Which was different. It's weird. I said early on, I said this, and it sounds ridiculous, but I mean it as the highest compliment, because this may be my favorite Jodie Foster performance I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes. But it is Jodie Foster doing an absolutely flawless impression of Steve Buscemi, in my opinion.
Wow.
She's playing a cranky old, I think, doctor. They call her nurse, but she's the one who runs the place, and she's the medic and everything. But this very cranky, old, hard-drinking lady who's just fixing all these criminals. And she comes off very Steve Buscemi to me, but she nails it. It's beautiful. And it doesn't help that the last time I saw her was Elysium. But, I mean, you know, she's done lots of wonderful things. I really liked this performance.
Hmm.
And I really liked Zachary Quinto's performance. It felt like a real change for Charlie Day, which was nice. It was a good time. Sterling K. Brown is arguably our POV, and I'm really getting into Sterling K. Brown as time goes on. I thought it was good. I liked it.
We saw a lot of movies, but now I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I don't think they were that good.
They must have been exciting. I feel like I had something else, but I don't know what it was. All right, let's draw a thing.
Another thing we've been watching a lot of, the British Bake Off show or whatever.
Yes, the American title is The Great British Baking Show. The actual title is The Great British Bake Off.
Yeah, we've been watching that.
Nice.
And
are you watching the Mel and Sue years or the Noel and Sandy years?
Nolan Sandy, and we're kind of going backwards, like we watched.
Yeah, because there's ones that says that there's a different thing on Netflix, the Great British Baking Show, The Beginnings, or whatever, and that's the earlier ones.
But like we watched the most, whatever Netflix has the latest, the last season, we watched that first, and now we're watching the season before that.
Okay.
But I find that I relate to all these people. Like, in ways I don't usually relate to people when I watch a TV show.
I haven't watched any regular Bake Off. I have only watched celebrity ones that they do for charity. There's like a single episode that they do because I enjoy those people. So I can't say. But I do know people talk about Bake Off and like... Because you don't really win much if you win Bake Off. People do it because they like to cook and they think they're good at cooking and they want to show that off.
I don't know what you do win. Just like a trophy?
There might be some money, but it's like $1,000 or something. Like, it's famously sort of UK game shows have very small winnings a lot of times.
Well, the thing
it's just for the fun of sort of being on a show.
The thing that I relate to a lot of the people, and everyone's nice.
Yes.
They're helping each other out.
To the degree that, like, if something goes wrong for somebody, other people will come to help them if they can.
Yeah, yeah. It's very unlike the stuff you see in America where everyone's competitive and talking trash to each other.
And it's, again, because the prize isn't that great. Nobody's there to win. They're there to compete and show off their cooking skills. So there's absolutely no need for chicanery and backstabbing and things like that because that's sort of not the point of the show. And also, you're not winning anything great. A lot of the people on the show... like with a lot of the ones here, will get like their own show and stuff, but you absolutely don't have to win to do that. Frequently, you just have to be well liked by the audience. And also, it's a British show, so you'll get like a 6-episode show of something, so it's not as exciting. But
I mean, I'm not really interested in the cooking stuff. I just think the people are nice. Yeah. My wife likes the cooking stuff, but I mean, I like these people are nice, good, decent, salt of the earth people. And not just in how they are when you see them being interviewed or whatever, but you can see in how they interact with others.
Yeah.
And it's kind of heartwarming, really. You know what else I relate to? This is kind of bothering me, actually, this part. So
Lex Luthor?
No, Hannah Gatsby, the interview I was listening to, she was talking about being autistic.
Yes.
And she was talking about what that's like for her.
Yeah.
And it sounded really familiar.
Yeah. When I was watching her performance and she was talking about what that was like for her that night, I had a serious talk with myself about, is this William? Would this explain William? And I decided no.
Okay, good.
There are a few things that don't hit that.
That's what I think.
And I was talking with Trish about this earlier. Like, we talk about autism as a spectrum, and it is.
Yeah, it is. Right.
But there's also a difference between neurological abnormality and personality trait.
Yeah, 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 right.
And like, she's very focused on autistic people don't like the unexpected, which I believe is accurate. But it's also possible to not like the unexpected in your life and not be autistic.
That's right.
And I can't remember, but I came up with a couple of things about you that I'm just like, no, because that's the thing is you have social awkwardness and you frequently don't relate to aspects of society.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can be somewhat introverted, but like, I don't think you have a problem socializing.
It exhausts me. She talked about that. But it's like,
it exhausts me too, and I'm one of the most social people there is.
That's an introverted thing. I think I know what my issue is. I think it's I was raised in this environment, in this culture, and then I was put in a different one.
Yes.
And I didn't get it.
You have a different perspective that, I think is social and not neurological.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm kind of relieved because...
Because it'd be late in life to be figuring that shit out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
It'd be hard to learn new tools for life. Right. But on the other hand, if it was true, you'd only have up to go. Like, you'd be learning new tools. And insofar as you could, you'd be like, hey, this could be nicer. But no, I think it's better to not have to be like, let me look at the world completely different right now.
Yeah. So Azurtalon wants to know.
Azurtalon doesn't want to know anything. He just wants to troll us.
Enchanted Lidsville Podcast.
Wow, that hurt.
Hostess or...
You know Lidsville.
Lidsville?
Yes.
I mean...
Sid and Marty Croft?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like HR Puff and stuff, but everybody's hats.
That's right. Hostess or Little Debbie? You know, the funny thing about that is Little Debbie was founded, and for a long time run, and it might still be, by Seventh-day Adventists.
I think you brought this up before. This sounds familiar.
So when I became a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, I got, there were a lot more Little Debbie things around when I went to a person's house, or if someone brought something they purchased to a potluck or whatever, and it's like, wow, Seventh-day Adventists really love Little Debbie. And they said, oh, well, it's because Adventist outfit, in Tennessee, there's an Adventist college, and the factory, the main Little Debbie factory, is there.
Little Debbie not make use of things like gelatin in their little products?
It's not vegan. They don't make use of lard.
No, but are they vegetarian? Because gelatin's not even vegetarian. Gelatin's from, like, horse hooves and shit like that.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. Seventh-day Adventists don't have to be vegetarian.
No.
But they do avoid the unclean meats that, you know, like with Jewish tradition. So no pork.
All right.
I think horse stuff would be all right. Like horse hooves or whatever would be fine.
All right.
But if it was based on pig, no, that wouldn't be okay.
All right.
And they don't use lard.
Well, that's usually based on pig. So
that's another reason why all of my Seventh-day Adventist friends always bought Little Debbie, was because Hostess might have lard in it.
I wish. I don't think Hostess is tasty enough to have lard in it.
Well, I think for a long time the ingredient list said beef tallow or lard. You never knew.
Oh, there you go.
You never knew which one. So Adventists would avoid Hostess for that reason. And other ones where they weren't sure, they'd just always go with Little Debbie because they knew it was an Adventist outfit, so there wasn't any pork products in it. And I actually did prefer Little Debbie stuff even before that. So.
I couldn't swear to you I've ever had Little Debbie. I only knew Little Debbie as the snack cake brand that Charlie Brown was really into.
Charlie Brown?
Huh? Yeah. Oh, are you kidding? All the Charlie Brown specials were sponsored by Little Debbie, and they would have little commercials in which the Peanuts gang was talking about how tasty Little Debbie stuff was.
I don't remember that at all.
Seriously?
Yeah.
It was the equivalent of...
I thought they were Hostess.
No,
or
that
Dolly
was...
Dolly Madison.
Oh, you're right. It was Dolly Madison. It wasn't Little Debbie.
Yeah, Dolly Madison.
No, because DC was Hostess. Because the Joker was always trying to get Batman's fruit pies and shit like that. It was ridiculous.
Dolly Madison.
That was hilarious.
You're right.
You're right. It was Dolly Madison.
Peanuts was Dolly Madison. I do remember that now.
And, well, now I'm mixing up because, no, I definitely have had Little Debbie, but not until I was old. Like, not until I moved here, basically. Not until my adulthood. Little Debbie is cheaper.
Is it?
Significantly.
I never really.
Or at least it was back when I was. I don't buy any of them nowadays.
Yeah, I don't either. I haven't bought anything from Little Debbie for a long time.
When I was little, it was all Hostess. Trish was really obsessed with Nutty Bars, and there are a version that's not Little Debbie, but Little Debbie's are the good ones.
Yeah,
there.
Little Debbie Nutty Bars are good.
And Little Debbie's would come up with more interesting things, but they often weren't... I think head-to-head, like if you gave me like a chocolate cupcake of Little Debbie's and a chocolate Hostess cupcake, like the Hostess one I think would be better in most cases.
They
did have something. I like those cosmic brownies. Because those were just ridiculously dense, chocolatey.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the most famous thing from Little Debbie are the oatmeal cream pies.
Yes, and you can't replace those with Hostess.
They are so good.
And those are still good. I've actually had one of those recently.
So good.
Those are. And there's not an equivalent for Hostess.
Well, my grandma was Seventh-day Adventist, so she always had Little Debbie stuff. So, and I pretty much like Little Debbie better than anything else for some reason.
Also, not only though, like... The vending machines at a couple of my workplaces have had a different brand of sort of more generic one. I can't remember what it was called. And then there's stuff like in the Northeast, you get Drake's Cakes that are sort of Seinfeld made those kind of famous. The Seinfeld and Rosie O'Donnell made those kind of famous. And I think we had some regional things too. But I'd say in general, insofar as I was raised on such things, I was raised on Hostess.
Yeah.
But then as an adult, I bought more Little Debbie. And now, I largely consider them all to be one of the things wrong with this country. Like, everything we talk about, how the food industry is making us unhealthy and obese, almost all of that is in all of those.
Yeah.
They need a little more corn and a little more low-grade meat, but otherwise everything is in those snack cakes.
Well, I was raised mostly on Little Debbie, but we had Dolly Madison and Hostess sometimes too, but it was mostly Little Debbie. And again, I always preferred Little Debbie. But you know, the interesting thing about all of the stuff that's bad for you today, almost all of it was made originally by religious people who were trying to get people to be more healthy. Like soda pop.
Yep.
So people wouldn't drink alcohol.
And in some cases, as medicine, literal medicine, as a stomach remedy.
Right. Certain snack cakes, and of course, were created kind of along or around the same time as breakfast cereals. Again, so people would eat breakfast or eat something before they went to work and would be healthier. But
or, let's be honest, or not masturbate. Kellogg made cornflakes because he thought the whole grains would stop you masturbating. That was a thing. Also, graham crackers, same thing.
Well, but
you won't masturbate.
But
although the graham crackers that he made were incredibly unsweetened and would not bear any resemblance to the ones we eat
nowadays. But the Seventh-day Adventists were heavily involved in the creation of breakfast cereals in particular.
How were they on masturbation?
I'm pretty sure.
Are they? Okay.
Well,
seems like a lot of major religions are.
It's not something that people do sermons about or anything, but you...
That would be funny.
The Ellen White, the person that's widely regarded as a prophet in the church, when she wrote about the subject, I believe she called it self-abuse?
Yeah, that's a common one.
Okay, so, and she was, not in favor. But breakfast cereal and snack cakes, people didn't think of them as unhealthy. I mean, they had sugar and stuff in them, but at least it was something someone could grab quickly and eat and have a little bit of something breakfast, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's still the marketing campaign in a lot of cases.
So
frozen waffles, that's the whole thing. Grab an egg on the way out.
So a lot of these things that now everyone acknowledges as making everybody diabetic started from religious people wanting people to be more healthy.
Yes, and continued through in the mid-20th century, which is when a bunch of research was done about the potential effect of sugars on the body, and then the sugar industry paid off those people to downplay the effect of sugar and play up fat instead. And that's why we then spent 20 to 30 years doing diets that literally give you diabetes.
Actually, I think one of the early chocolatiers was the same kind of thing with hot chocolate rather than less healthy beverages or something.
Yeah, there was a big...
Gradually evolved into candy industry.
There were some big studies in the 1960s, and it came out just a few years ago that the sugar industry paid them to falsify the records.
And make fat the thing that they focused on.
Yes, yeah. And downplay the effects of sugar. And that is one of the biggest reasons, no pun intended, why obesity... diabetes, all that stuff.
As I understand it,
they have about as much blood on their hands as the tobacco industry.
The way the story's been told to me, you can talk about big sugar in the same way you can talk about big tobacco.
Yep.
Exact same way. There was research, there was suppression of facts, they knew it was bad, but they didn't care or they didn't want anyone to know.
Yeah.
And then they did all this stuff and getting sugar drinks into schools even. I mean, all of it.
And now it's just built there. This is a weird thing that happened to me today. It's a little bit of a tangent, but not really. I found this interesting because I, was raised, I can handle artificial sweeteners fine. Some people are like, they taste chemically. I'm like, they're fine. I drink diet soda and stuff like that. So I've told you I've been drinking more tea.
Yeah.
And the other day I was like, there is more and more research coming out that artificial sweeteners can cause you some issues and in fact can screw up your metabolism in some ways.
Hmm.
What if I put real... Because I sweeten my tea. what if I put real sugar in there? It's just a little bit. And also, it's an actual caloric intake. Maybe that'll help me, like, hold off till lunch kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, because part of the thing with artificial sweeteners is certain parts of your body are convinced you're then getting carbs and you're not, and that is
bad.
So I was like, let me try this. So I grabbed the raw sugar because everybody thinks that's easier. And I put like 2 packets of it in there. Normally I put in 2 packets of equal, basically. And I put it in and I had my tea. I could not tell it was sweetened.
Really?
Near the end, I kind of a little bit, but it tasted essentially not sweet at all to me because artificial sweetener is so intensely sweet. Comparatively, like, to me, this was not hardly anything.
Huh.
Was
two
very weird
too.
And creepy. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Versus 2 packets of, like I said, like equal, basically. Very weird. All right. We are at time, and we have to do another one of these, and I want this dude out of my house. So, y'all have fun. And then gather around the fireworks next week for whatever we're going to do in the next 10 minutes or so. Bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.